There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Georgia Tolley is alongside me, as always. Good morning again to you, GT.
Hello, good morning.
You and her enjoyed a nice long weekend because you were out and about, weren't you?
I was out and about. Yeah. I went to the Atlantis Hotel for a night, which was fantastic, with the kids.
Yeah.
Took full advantage of all the facilities, including the kids' club, where we left them for 3 hours, which was glorious.
Swimming with sharks and dolphins?
Swimming with sharks and dolphins, and then lots of pool time, because it's hot, but not too hot. I'm going to say that. It's not too hot yet. I was up this morning. I think it's still nicer.
The jury is out on the heat. I think certainly, yeah, I take your point. Yesterday evening was very nice indeed.
Yes.
Beautiful evening. I think mornings and evenings seem to be very temperate at the moment. Middle of the day, intemperate.
A little bit spicy,
As is borne out by the fact that I now carry three shirts with me as I leave the house every single morning, because it's this bit here. It's this finishing here and getting in the car to go to Media City. That's the bit that does me.
Really, you need an air-conditioned sort of golf cart with a spray to get you down the road, because it is quite a long walk to your car.
Yeah, well, that, and then yeah, it's just like getting into a little sort of baby bell, isn't it?
Yeah.
4001, if you want to send in your thoughts on the weather at the moment, how's that faring, but equally on any of the comments that are coming from our paper reviewers. And it is a pleasure to welcome into the studio, yet again returning for the paper review, the CEO of Tahaleem, Rosamund Marshall, joins us live in the studio. Rosamund, great to have you with us here again.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
For those that haven't tuned in before, that those that are tuning in for the very first time, maybe you can just put in a nutshell for us what Tahaleem do.
We are an education management company. We have 10 international schools with about 9,000 students in both Abu Dhabi and Dubai.
You'll have no surprise that Roz has brought a couple of educational stories to the table this morning. We're talking about those and others as well. And alongside her, returning also the chairman of Hanover Middle East, Archie Behrens, is back with us. Good to see you, Archie.
Good morning, Tom. Great to be here again.
Hanover are?
We are a leading communications agency, headquartered in the UK, offices in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. Have been here the team's been here for many, many years, but as a business, we've been here for 2 years.
I want to kick things off, if I may, with reactions, because I've been out and about over the weekend, as I usually am, and one of the conversations that is cropping up time and time again are reactions to the announcements from the Executive Council, the announcements from the Cabinet with regards to strategic planning for the various vision programs that are in place in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. I think these are stimulus packages or decisions that are affecting every single industry, no more so than education, Roz. And I mean, it's one of the stories that you've brought to the fore, the two-year post-study resident visas in the UAE. That's just one element of this strategic package. From an educational standpoint and point of view, are what you're hearing from the leaders of the UAE and from the Cabinet and from the Executive Council, are they going to help in the long run at the moment? And what's the impact going to be in the short term?
Certainly the plans that they are talking about in both Abu Dhabi and in Dubai are looking at how they can protect the long-term future here. And something like the study visas being extended for 2 years for the post-study will really help, I think, in terms of retaining some of the top talent in the region. These plans are part of, as you say, sweeping reforms to both visa and labour insurance legislation. And by keeping students in the country, giving them the option to find a job after the 6 months from graduation, that two-year visa will give them more flexibility and reduce some of the stress. I think, you know, other packages we heard a couple of weeks ago now about the freeze on school fees, and that inevitably is going to be something that will help employers and attract more younger families into the country. We've seen quite a lot of families who've sadly left through different economic circumstances over the last couple of years, and Tahaleem as a company chose to freeze school fees last year. So when we had the freeze announcement last Wednesday week now, then that was something that will hit providers quite badly.
That's something I wanted to ask you, because there's been a lot of chat about the sort of the impact and the benefit it's had to parents. We've got a lot of parents talking about what a great initiative this is from them. Mm. But, you know, in terms of the model, the majority of the model of education here is a business model. Schools need to pay for their rent. Schools need to pay for their upkeep, etc. Surely this is going to hit school Absolutely. Providers here in the region.
Yes, and we were talking with our board, who are all local gentlemen here, last week about this very fact. And it is a difficulty for us because, as I say, having taken the initiative early from Tony's perspective, we're now going to get a double whammy and be hit again. But we weren't actually going to increase fees in all of our schools this year anyway. We are looking at how we can manage some of those costs that don't impact education itself and the students and the teachers. And I think other schools are talking about whether they can afford to pay a teacher's increase. We certainly will be doing that in Tallinn because we strongly believe in investing in our teachers. The quality of the school never exceeds the quality of the teachers. So we have that perpetual increase in terms of looking at how we look after our staff, how we make sure we're investing in our staff and their development. And companies and schools that don't actually do that and choose to actually cut corners with teaching staff will actually impact the quality of the education they can provide to their students. So this is a worry, I think, for the longer term. How will schools cope? How will investors cope with increasing costs inevitably as a cost base? But then actually, what do you do with capped income? And the fees are always heavily regulated here. So this is something that investors can't take control of straight away.
It's all part of this wide-ranging stimulus package across the whole of the UAE. Archie, for a person that is skilled in the art of communications as well, one thing that really interested me here, given the fact the far-ranging element of these changes and these packages and the fact that they were sort of hitting pretty much every single industry at the moment out there in terms of trying to stimulate the economy moving forward. Using social media, releasing the information to the public almost as it came out of the cabinet meeting, is that something that sort of reverberated with the population as a whole?
Yes, and social media is, there is more penetration of social media in this part of the world, arguably, than anywhere else. So it has now become a mainstream channel with which to impart news. So I wasn't surprised by that. You look at the way Donald Trump behaves, not that that's a valid example, but using Twitter and such other channels to impart news has become mainstream. There was nothing innovative about it, I didn't think. It had to be done. Any large piece of news of that nature has to go on social media. I don't think that was the interesting part of it. It was funnily enough, I was actually in with The National a couple of weeks ago, not long after the original news came out.
Yeah.
And they were very much pre-briefed, and they were given time to get their heads around it.
Okay.
And that's why the reporting in The National was so extensive, and they had time to properly analyze it. Now, that, I think, is essential. Because you'd often find in this part of the world that news is just rushed out. Once it's been decided, right, boom, that's it. And it doesn't matter what time of day. It could be 5 o'clock in the evening, right, we've decided, that's it, out it goes. And the news channels, the editors, the analysers, the commentators, don't get a chance to get their heads around it. And that can be a missed opportunity. I don't think they did that in this case. I think they really realised that there was a lot of material there that people need to get their heads around, and therefore they gave people time to analyze it, to absorb it, to digest it before it actually then went live. And that's a really important part of communications.
I do want to get your thoughts on the package themselves and some of the information that came out of those announcements. We'll do that in just a few moments' time. Time is running up against us, though. We will continue the conversation with Roz, with Archie, with George, myself, and of course you. Do get your thoughts into us on 4001. Already they're coming in on the text messages. So 4001 for your comments and thoughts, please.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. On the Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It's looking good out there on the roads of the UAE. A few people still away for their Eid break. Some people maybe getting away early for their summer break. Or maybe, Georgia, it's just everyone heading on down to Royal Ascot as well. Who knows?
It's quite possible.
The entire UAE heading on down there to support Godolphin, amongst others.
Well, that would be a very good idea.
More on Royal
Expensive.
Ascot a little later on in proceedings. We are joined in studio by Roz Marshall, the CEO of Tarlim, Archie Behrens, the chairman of Hanover Middle East, both of them here working through some of the stories that caught their eye. Story that caught all of... I mean, we'll continue that conversation. Feel free to send in your comments and thoughts with regards to the new announcements coming from the Executive Council, coming from the Cabinet in recent weeks. weeks. I know that's very much a discussion point for many out there. How is it going to affect you and your business? Has it convinced you to change your short-term or long-term plans? Any of these would be appreciated. Your thoughts when it comes to education, when it comes to setting up a business, with regards to visas and more, please do share your thoughts. In the meantime, though, let's get to some of the other stories. Let's go to one that is very prevalent here in the region. It's the fight against plastics here in the UAE. News out last week that there could well be a fee put on plastic bags at certain UAE grocery stores. Now, this might be something a little bit new for the UAE. It's nothing new elsewhere in the world. In fact, over in large parts of the United States, Canada as well, and North America, Walmart, one of the biggest brands, recently, at the beginning of this year, started charging 5 cents for each plastic bag. How has that been reacted to over there?
With plastic bags, it's probably no big deal, because ultimately they're not great for the environment. They've got to be produced, all the rest. I think it makes sense to get rid of them and then, or charge people for them, and then they're at least going to take the plastic bags, pay 5 cents, or they're going to bring their own bags and be prepared and maybe better for the environment and better on their pocketbook.
I think they should increase the price. I mean, just remember to bring your bags. It's not that difficult, and being charged and you remember it better.
I usually bring my own plastic bags and recycle them. I'm not a big fan, all fan of recycling plastic bags or buying heavy-duty bags and using them over and over again.
Just some of the reactions from shoppers over in the United States, British Columbia to be precise, there on the back of Walmart's decision. Archie Behrens picked up on this story for us today. Is it going to fly here?
I certainly hope so. I actually, the lady who was commenting from British Columbia just then said she didn't think it was enough. I completely agree. I mean, 24 fills, okay, fine. I mean, but to different people, that is a different amount. But it's pretty small. I think it could be a lot bigger. And I think it should be a lot bigger. I mean, you know, why not a dirham or two dirhams or five dirhams to really, really put people off using plastic? I mean, let's be clear. Plastic, manufactured plastic, has become the sort of pariah of the world. There's so much now. There's so much awareness. You think of Sky Sports campaign last year in terms of, you know, plastic bottles in the sea and doing everything you can to stop using plastic bottles. This has become a mainstream issue. Mm. I thoroughly welcome it. The plastic bag culture here, I mean, it's interesting. You go into a little shop, a Bacala or somewhere like that, to get a pint of milk, and the first thing the guy does is pull out a plastic bag and put it in. You know, listen, all I'm doing is buying a pint of milk to take home. I don't need a plastic bag, and yet that whole culture needs to change.
But here's the point then, and it's one that I've discussed at length with a number of people, and you talked there about the sort of cultural change, and maybe that is the sort of cultural change, because we talked about demographics already with regards to some of the big stories that are developing at the moment, but the demographics here is almost that expectancy that you're going to be given a bag, and you almost need that bag in order to transport your goods, and it's seen as sort of you're paying for your goods and therefore you're paying for a bag. Is it just our sort of approach that we say, you know, we don't actually need a bag, we can just carry those goods to our car?
Yeah, but why can't that be instilled quite right across? And yeah, there are lots of other incentives, I guess, but this is a sort of, you know, if you want it, you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And people will suddenly start, you know, particularly as money gets tighter, you know, the people's household incomes, you know, getting smaller, cost of living is getting higher, which we know it is. You know, suddenly it starts thinking, okay, fine, if it's costing me 24 fills or a dirham every time, actually, over a period of a year, that could be, you know, a reasonable saving. And take your own. I mean, it's very easy to buy, particularly these, I mean, we use environmentally friendly cotton bags, which you can just take again and again and again to the supermarket, and you never have to pay for a bag.
Single-use plastics, Roz.
I think if you talk to many young children in this country, you'll find that the health of the planet is something that they're all talking about in school. Mm. In lessons we have explaining about what it's like for marine life in the oceans. In fact, we have physical examples of that where we tip a load of plastic bottles and plastic bags into the swimming pool and get the children to actually see what it's like to be, wow, a real fish in the sea, having to swim through all of that. And it's a really, really good crystallised example for them to take away. And a lot of pester power then comes to parents saying, we don't need a plastic bag, here's the recyclable bags that we can take. And you can buy them in the supermarket, they're not that expensive, they're bags for life. And this is something that's not just swept through America and Canada, but also through the whole of Europe.
Mm.
And it's almost an alien concept. You go into supermarkets in Europe and you'll find a great big crate full of cardboard boxes, another opportunity to recycle. And who wouldn't put their goods, their grocery goods, into a nice cardboard box in the boot of your car? Saves all the plastic bags sliding around when you go around the corner. So there's a lot of benefits to it. It's just, it's not so much culture, it's actually a mindset.
Yeah.
And it's changing that mindset of people. And the children are very, very good at it.
I agree. And I think, and I've seen it in my own household, you know, with that Pesta Power for, you know, turning off taps whilst you're brushing your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've grown up and that's what you keep the tap on until you finish brushing your teeth. And my daughter comes back and slaps it off and says, no, Dad, you're doing it wrong. I suppose it's the same with us when we were growing up and seatbelts. You know, our parents didn't wear seatbelts. We encourage them to wear seatbelts to a certain degree. You're seeing that now with plastics and the impact it's having. I just think the challenge here is not so much the people that's in this studio, it's the huge blue collar workforce here who sort of, you know, the bag is a sense of entitlement almost. And I know that sounds really, really simplistic, but it is that whole idea. We said, okay, give me a pint of milk and I take it to my car. For those that don't drive, how do you transport that milk for the rest of the day? If you've got a plastic bag, it sort of goes without. But that education starts not in a school, but it's educating those that have sort of grown up with plastic bags. And there is no surprise that in developing parts of the world at the moment, the biggest issue is plastic bag wastage, because there is this culture that it's part of the shopping process there.
But the cotton bags are cheaper and last longer as well,
exactly.
And are biodegradable. So that's the cultural thing. As you talk about the very thin cotton bags, we actually give our new teachers when they arrive a canvas bag and they can take all of their products home in that. And it's one of those things that is really nice welcome gift for them, but it also gives them something to use on a day-by-day basis. So it is actually a process, a mindset of people to actually say, I'm not going to have plastic bags. I mean, we have plastic bags that sort of sit in, they used to have those horrible cotton covers, you'd stuff them in an old lady's sort of type of way in the larder, and then you take that plastic bag and use it again. Nobody ever did, and that's why this disposable mindset needs to change. It really is about, you know, preserving the planet, and the children will take that forward.
Or I suppose, Archie, the other way to do it is just go down the French route, and, you know, you get to the end of the checkout, we've got all these bits and pieces, you've forgotten your bags.
Tough.
Well, it's a tough, you know.
Have to go and scrabble around for a box somewhere. I agree
Absolutely.
With Roz on the beauty of boxes. But to give you an idea, I mean, the article that I picked up on, which is in Gulf News, it says how many bags this country consumes per year. Does anyone want to have a guess? And if you haven't actually read the article, it's a scary amount.
Billions?
It is billions.
Yeah. It's billions. I'd have gone for half a billion.
No, it's 11 billion bags annually.
Do you know, though, it's not just bags that they need to concentrate on, because I just spent this weekend a night at a hotel. By the end of the stay, which was 24 hours, we had at least 8 small bottles of sort of half-empty water in the room. And so that whole culture has got to change as well. And how happy would guests be to come in and find a sort of sealed glass IKEA-style bottle in the room instead? Would they think it was as hygienic? So there's such a massive turnaround that's got to take place before you really are starting to go plastic free.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hey, please do have your say. How do you do that? You text us now on 4001. Just reacting to some of the big stories of the last week, of the weekend, and this morning as well. Keep it locked here on Dubai I-103.8 for updates on all of the latest big story news, courtesy of the ARN News team. Getting to more reaction in just a few moments' time, and one story that is cropping up time and time again is education. We're going to get the latest from Rosamund Marshall, not just on education, but also on the state of play when it comes to the younger generations at the moment. This is one that I've been battling with at the moment. I just spoke to the business breakfast team a little earlier on about how there is Dad trying to convince his 11-year-old son to sit and watch every single game of the FIFA World Cup with him at the moment, which lasts for about 9 minutes into each match, and then he reverts to Fortnite for the next 89 minutes of the match. And what's happening with the 13-year-old? Well, can I get her out of her bedroom at the moment? No. Why? Because of a certain TV show over in the United Kingdom that seems to have taken the world by storm. And why? Just listen to this.
What do you think about Brexit?
What's that?
Where we're leaving the European Union. I seriously don't have a clue.
So, like, if you, so it's to, it was to leave the EU, so we wouldn't be part of Europe.
Which would mean welfare and, like, things we trade with would be cut down.
So does that mean we won't have any trees?
Trees? Oh.
No. That's got nothing to do with it, babe.
Why wouldn't we have trees?
What are you talking about?
No, we're just not in the European Union. We're still classed as, like, being in Europe.
Doesn't it mean it would be harder to, like, go to, like, Spain and stuff?
So it'd be harder to go on holidays?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I love my holidays.
Yeah.
No, that's just a little clip for the latest season of Love Island, which, guess what, has generated record viewing figures back in the UK, but not just in the UK, the world over. The online editions are being picked up left, right and centre. It's been franchised the world over. The creators become a multi-millionaire, and as are the number of people that are entering this particular reality series, which pitches youngsters against each other on an island in the Balearics to try and find eternal love. You work out the rest. George Tully's a big fan of it, of course.
I absolutely hate it.
We've got Rosamund Marshall in the studio with us as well, who was listening on with interest. That look, that is a flippant little aside on the whole thing, but it sort of adds into your next story about IQ and our fascination with IQ. Ros.
Yes, a flippant aside, but actually really worrying. And this story may have some concrete foundation to underpin what we've just heard, because the report is about young people. IQs have started to fall by 7 points per generation, and this is a pretty worrying trend, scientists are saying. So young people's scores seem to have started to deteriorate, having climbed steadily since World War II, 1945, this study has found from the UK. And the fall, which is looking at around 7 points of IQ per generation, is believed to have begun with those born in 1975. And the drop in scores is really this end of the trend, which was known as the Flynn effect, which has seen these IQs, average IQs, rise for the past 60 to 70 years by roughly 3 points a decade. So why? Why is there a decline? And the decline they're talking about is maybe due to a difference in techniques in the way that languages and maths are taught in schools, but it could also be down to people spending more time on technological devices instead of reading books. That seems like an easy swipe. If we look at another study, though, from Norway, where they've looked at the Norwegian men's IQs are lower than the scores of their fathers when they were the same age. So this seems to substantiate some of the trend data, where in Norway they did a test of 730,000 men, a standard IQ test, who had reported for national service between 1970 and 2009. And some of those findings show that there are still worrying declines. And why is that? Is it due to environmental factors rather than genetics? It could be, as I say, the changes in the education system, the media, the environment, nutrition. Apparently, if you eat fish, there's a study saying that if you eat fish, they found 9 to 11-year-olds who eat it at least once a week scored almost 5 points higher in IQ tests to those who seldom eat fish. Another study in the US talking about more than 500 children were asked how often they consumed fish in the past month, with options ranging from never to at least once a week. And then they took part in an IQ test, which includes things that, such as verbal and written communication skills. And if you looked at different factors taken into account, such as parental education, occupation and marital status, it found children who eat fish at least once a week scored 4.8 points higher than those who never do. So perhaps it's a good thing for people here in the UAE, where fishes are plenty and very nice too. So is intelligence really heritable? And researchers are looking at how people with high IQ scores would have children with IQ scores above average. And I think there's a long set of data here to read through, and access to education is probably the most conclusive factor, which explains disparities in intelligence, according to scientists here. But one last thought from this report was, such as the IQ test itself, it could well be outmoded in today's fast-paced world of constant technological change. So a lot of food for thought in here. And, you know, are kids actually dumb or dumber? It was one of the headlines I read. And I don't think so at all. I think it's much more about the context of where these reports are coming from, and how we're measuring IQ is probably another fundamental question, and how we do that. You know, if you're looking at education needs to change, then maybe the way intelligence is expressed also needs to change too.
It's an interesting one. I want to get the thoughts of the father, Archie Behrens. Not father, Archie Behrens. I'm not even just
a man of the cloth. I don't think so.
I just changed your title there. But Archie, as a father, I mean, is there, obviously not looking at your own children, I'm sure are achieving in every right, as we've talked about previously on the show, but in terms of this culture of dumbing down, can we get away from that?
It's really hard. I mean, I was very taken by the story of your child watching the World Cup, who, you know, you want them to watch the whole match. I did exactly the same with my younger daughter, who is obsessed with football, but then turns around and says, I prefer playing it than watching it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. But then I said, come on, watch this match. It's a really, really good match. Spain v Portugal. You know, you've got Cristiano Ronaldo. You've got the Spanish team and everything. She says, I just want to watch the highlights.
Yeah.
She only wants to watch the highlights. She only wants to watch the good bits. And now that's reflective of the sort of I want it now type of thing. I don't want to wait for the interesting bits. I'm not really interested in the whole scheme of things. I'm only interested in the good bits. Now, transfer that into how you absorb information. How do you consume your content, and how does that inform your intelligence? And that is really worrying. You know, you only want to read the executive summary of a book. You don't want to read the whole book. And therefore, you think, how much knowledge are you missing out on? And that is a concern. How do you address it? I'm not sure. Again, as a parent, I've got another anecdote, which was quite interesting, which was I downloaded. There was an article about this in one of the UK papers. And it's at the bottom of it. It had, how good is your IQ? And there was a sort of extract from a Mensa test. And I printed it off. I had a go at it myself. I'm not going to say how many I got, but I didn't get them all. And then I printed it off and asked my older daughter, who is a pretty bright spark. And she got almost exactly the ones that I found difficult, she absolutely found easy.
Yeah.
And the ones that I found easier, she struggled with. What does that say? Does it say people are being taught differently, which is one of the things you mentioned, Roz, in terms of how much, what are the different teaching techniques? Also, the other thing, she's doing her GCSEs, and we were talking about chemistry and physics, which I studied chemistry up to A level. She's doing it for GCSE. She's really interested by it. And she said things that I had not been taught, because actually science had moved on, and science has moved on from the time I was studying stuff. She said, no, that's not true anymore, Daddy.
Well, that's interesting too. That highlights the point, and Roz, I just want to get your thoughts on this, because I think you hit on a really interesting point. You know, what can be done about this? We can either bemoan the fact that we are dumbing down at the moment, or do we have to sort of flip on its head and look at the way we test IQ in the first place? Because if everything else is evolving so quickly around us in this digital age, do we have to relook at what might be an outmoded way of testing?
Absolutely. And in education, it's forever thus, because as the daily intellectual experiences are different for students of today than they were when we were all at school, and we've talked about the change of technology in that, and for example social media, all of this actually means that intelligence is expressed in very different ways now.
Yeah.
So this IQ test may well be something that isn't far-reaching enough to be able to give us a more accurate measure. And if you tested chemistry, as you say, to take your chemistry exam from 25, 30 years ago to today, and what would students make of it? And some of those would probably be factually inaccurate. So we have to evolve. Yeah. Education, by the very nature of it, is something that people learn for life. You don't learn your maths timetables, put it away and never use them again. And even, interesting enough, we talk about rote learning by rote, and how, in my day that was all we ever did, and it was stuck in our heads, and now we know exactly what our times tables are. But we've had to reteach our children that in order to be good mental mathematicians. And I was looking at another study over the weekend in the UK of 70,000 children, and talking about the importance of parents and the education of their children. And this is something in international schools, it can be much more of a challenge than it might be at some of the state schools at home or independent schools at home, because the parents' influence on the child, how they bring the child up from the very, very start in terms of reading to the child, listening to the child, talking with the child, discussing with the child, taking the child out for outings and talking about things that you would normally evolve into learning at school, is a really important part. And unfortunately now, with many, many family demographics, that is more of a luxury than a given today.
I'm not going to ask everyone for their IQs around the table. The calling card, well, I am. George Atolli, I'm sure you're there. You're jumping at the bit at the moment to tell us your IQ. I bet it you've got it as your calling card, have you?
106.
Oh, look at
you. I've no idea.
Cool, you had me really worried there because I have no idea.
If, however, any of our listeners out there do have that information to hand, have you had your IQ tested recently? Has it changed in time? Your thoughts on the IQ testing system as well, and on the wider subject of dumbing down. Is it something that you're concerned about at the moment? Please do share your thoughts with us by texting them to us now on 4001.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Summer loving had me a blast.
Summer loving happened so fast.
I met a girl crazy for me.
Met a boy cute as can be.
Summer days drifting away to another summer night.
Now, just before you turn off, that's not Georgia and myself having broken into song of a Monday morning, although you never know. Hey, George?
You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
It is, however, just to reiterate, a bit of a change down here. We're trying something new and exciting at Dubai 103.8. Want to get your involvement in proceedings from July. We're going to be playing your favourite songs of the summer. We want you to help shape the playlist for us. It's also the chance to win a fabulous family holiday for four people to Sicily, of all places. So if this might be it, or other show tunes, or whatever it might be, get yourself on to the website, dubaii1038.com. Take part in a quick music survey for your chance to win and hear the music you want to listen to. There is a prescribed list on there at the moment. Also the opportunity for you to give other thoughts and feedback on what you'd like to hear over the long summer months. I just say put the entire Grease soundtrack on, back to back, surely.
Oh, it's my favourite, for sure.
Well, there we are.
Under the dark, the boys stay out till 10 o'clock. Summer fling don't mean a thing, but oh, the summer night.
Quite enough of that then. We will return to today's talkers because we have in studio with us the CEO of Talium, Ros Marshall, and Archie Behrens also with us here today. Archie, I turn to you. Actually, before we do that, just a bit of feedback on a couple of the stories that are coming through already. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity, Ros, to finish up on the story we were talking about there. We were talking about, you know, the worrying lowering of IQs generation on generation, but then also the evolution of the way that we are learning and expressing ourselves as well. So it's not just IQ these days.
No, I think in fact we often measure EQ, emotional quotient, as much as IQ in terms of people's ability to do a job. So when we're looking at leaders and managers and management development programs, psychometric tests are an important part of selecting the right staff for success nowadays, and the evaluation of their ability to communicate, to be adaptable, to be flexible within situations. And in communication itself, it's frequently the root of all issues. And you go back to seeing Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump, and communication finally suddenly sort of seems to push over quite a lot of barriers that were there before. Goodness knows what they did communicate about behind closed doors. But so EQ is something that really is very, very important and is fast advancing as a crucial measure for success going forwards.
Let us turn. I just want to get Dan's thought in, because obviously this is not just our opportunity to have our say on some of the big stories, but also yours. Dan, thank you for your comment. Dan's texted on 4001. Listeners, you can do the same as well if there's anything you'd like to share. We've been talking education thus far in this first hour. Dan says, our school has just announced that they will add more classes per year after being told a few years ago they would not. So no increase, but other way to increase revenue and puts additional strain on existing resources. Dan says, in my opinion, it's not right. Dan, thanks very much indeed for that. Let's turn to Archie Behrens, who's with us here in studio. He is a man who leaves no stone unturned when it comes to unearthing stories. In fact, he's gone to NASA for this one, no less.
Well, it was actually reported in the National rather than, but it's a story about NASA, and it's some new images, which are, I urge you to look at them if you can. The incredible images taken of the empty quarter just after the big cyclone that hit Amman recently. Apparently, more rain fell, three times Amman's annual rainfall fell in just 24 hours. and flooded the empty quarter. Now, the last time that happened was 20 years ago, where satellite technology and photographic technology was nowhere near as advanced as it is now. And NASA has released pictures taken of the empty quarter just after the storm. And it's an incredible image. It's just literally millions and millions of little lakes dotted around the sand dunes. And I zeroed in on it and just thought, what a great story, what a great image. And, you know, it was nothing more than that. But it struck me that the modern photography, the ability of modern photography to bring the wonders of the world into people's front rooms is just mind-blowing.
On the back of that, there is a great one that NASA have just released as well, this comparison, 34-year comparison of the coastline of the UAE. If you get the chance to see that, they've unearthed this satellite image they took in 1984 of the Abu Dhabi to Dubai coastline, and then they've superimposed one of their most recent ones from this year, and it shows the transformation of the coastline, but also the density, the population density that it picks up in, not just on the coastline but within the country as a whole. So that's worth having a look at. But having had a look at that, Archie, one thing that did strike me is that whilst we might feel a little bit claustrophobic in the urban landscapes of Abu Dhabi, Dubai, more recently Ras Al Khaimah amongst others as well, we are in a country that has huge expanses of desert, which are, you can get lost in, can't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not called the empty quarter for nothing. And you read Thesiger's book, Arabian Sands, and his adventures trekking through the empty quarter, which is a sort of considered a must-read book for anyone arriving in the country. And it is amazing. You can easily get lost there. In fact, I think I read somewhere the empty quarter is the largest sand expanse of sand in the world.
Yeah.
It is the largest desert in the world. It's interesting because you always think of the Sahara Desert as being, you know, you
Death
look at a
Valley
map
or something like that.
And actually the Sahara Desert has plenty of areas of vegetation and even, you know, small amounts of urbanization, whereas the empty quarter is just dune after dune after dune. And actually, it's maybe opportune to bring in another story that I spotted, which is this is great. This is a volunteer force set up by a guy. Let me just dig it out. UA volunteers to the rescue of stranded victims in the desert. And there is a gentleman who my absolutely take my hat off to. There's a picture of him in a paraglider with a UAE flag. He is called
Ali
Al-Shamari. The UAE Rescue Group, who presumably they do it with a big smile on their face when they see these poor expats who've gone out for a day of dune bashing and then have gone and got royally stuck in the sand, which sounds funny. It's actually, I mean, that's thankfully not happened to me. The only time I got stuck in the desert, I had a guide who was able to drive me out pretty quickly. But if you do go into the desert without proper precautions, it can be actually very, very life-threatening. So this guy appears to have built a business out of it, and he's attracted a whole lot of volunteers to go and help him.
It's extraordinary, 180 volunteers. He's former military, isn't he, as well? But it just shows you that spirit of volunteerism is still very much live here.
Very much so, yeah.
If you'd like to share your thoughts on that, one of you have been rescued from the desert? If so, who, by whom? Would you be willing to get involved in a volunteering group such as this, the UAE Rescue Group, that has helped thousands of residents and tourists who went camping, dune bashing, but, for want of a better phrase, got stuck. If you would like to share your thoughts on that story, please do so. Talking of stories, we'll have more thoughts on them from Archie and Roz in just a few moments' time. It's usually a Sunday morning paper review. Today it is a Monday morning paper review. In conversation with Rosamund Marshall, the CEO of Tarleem, and Archie Behrens, who's the chairman of Hanover Middle East, and of course taking your thoughts and comments as well. Keep them coming in. 4001 on the text, 04-423-1010 if you're having a say on the phone lines, or equally online at DubaiI1038FM, hashtag DubaiI1038. Thanks very much indeed to all of those that have commented on a number of our stories this morning, both online and on the text system, and we'll continue with those stories now. And obviously, we just heard from Georgia that the roads are quiet at the moment. I'm sure a lot of people have taken extended Eid breaks. A lot of people might even, dare we say it, have got away away early, taking advantage of more affordable air prices before the price hike, which comes always after the schools start to break up for the summer term. We will see something of an exodus over the summer months. It's interesting getting the thoughts of Emirates Airline, as Tim Clark's been speaking on one of the onboard podcasts about his vision for the future of the airline and what is a growingly competitive environment at the moment. He had this to say on one particular aspect of what he sees for the future.
What we may have is aircraft that are, I hate to say this to a number of passengers, windowless. On the outside, there will appear to be no windows, but on the inside, there will be a full display of windows. And we will use fiber optic camera technology to beam in the images from the outside into those windows. And we have cameras bringing in the images from outside. In fact, these images are such high definition with a very high pixel count, they are better than with the naked eye. So I can see the modern aircraft of the future flying faster, higher, windowless. Why do I say windowless? Because you can save 50% of the weight of the aircraft if you remove the windows, simply because they are, in terms of build and structure and load, quite a problem.
Tim Clark there giving his thoughts to the in-flight podcast of Emirates Airline. And that was a story that was picked up on by most of the broadsheets, all the big media suppliers here in the region and internationally as well. I saw the BBC, CNN, amongst others, picking up on his comments there. Roz also reacting to it. Interesting. I mean, fascinating. 50% is down to the windows in terms of weight. Mm.
Well, I was intrigued by this story because when I travel on my own, I always choose a window seat if I can. But when I go with my husband, who always likes the inside centre aisle seat, I have to get squeezed into one of those things where there's four of you in a row.
Yeah.
And I only have to climb over him if I actually need to get out during the course of the flight. So he thinks that's quite a good thing. But for me, I think the window is what I normally go for. But I'm actually quite intrigued and excited by the opportunity to think that I won't have to lean over anybody else to see. Because if these images are going to be projected onto these false windows, then most of the people who are stuck in the centre would actually get a much better view than they would have otherwise had.
Mm.
If they're not in the window seat itself. So as an idea, it's quite intriguing. I think the fact that the planes can allegedly go faster and are presumably supposed to be safer, the fuselage becomes stronger because they don't have to take account of building in the windows. A lot of those things seem like a good evolution to me. I think there may well be some concerns for passengers and for the staff themselves, the air crew, in emergency situations, if the electrical power goes down, for example, and it's dark, nobody can actually understand what's going on outside, and therefore how do they guide passengers to safety. But no doubt there'll be good drills and a good risk prevention method for that. These windows, of course, are currently being trialled in first class, not that I've actually...
Sorry, Archie can tell us all about that.
That's very good.
Right.
So, and the whole idea of it being a very streamlined airline from the outside, I don't think will bother anybody because obviously that's not what you're looking at when you're indoors and in the plane. So I think the message that Tim Clark gave about the quality of the images, talking about your NASA pictures and how wonderful those are, and the technology is definitely there to see how much better the images will be than we would have otherwise seen. So bring it on. I think it sounds fantastic as long as it doesn't affect the prices.
And that's interesting, isn't it? The fact that there has been such a positive response. I suppose, Archie, the only people that are sort of having sleepless nights about this is a certain CEO of a glass manufacturer somewhere in the Midwest of America at the moment going, oh, no, please not.
Sure, he feels very, very, very concerned indeed. Sleepless nights indeed. I completely agree with you, Roz. And funny enough, I just pick up on something slightly more humorously. When you say you travel with your husband, he takes the inside, the aisle seat.
Yes.
Why don't you take the other aisle seat so you can, you know, then you both have the aisle. That's what my wife and I do.
Yeah, I don't like the aisle either, though.
You don't like the aisle?
No, because I don't like being swept as people go up and down.
Okay.
I much prefer, if you're in the window, you're actually sort of in the curve of the plane, and you can curl into that quite well.
Yeah.
So I enjoy
that. No, I agree with you. And the view.
Indeed, view.
But as you say now, you won't need to. I mean, I think this is brilliant.
It is. And I wonder if it will have an impact on cost, because if you be able to reduce, become more efficient, then surely that should have an impact on cost.
Well, it should save fuel costs and maybe they
shorter
might pass.
Shorter flight times?
Yeah, shorter flight times, reduce fuel costs, maybe lower airfares. It'd be nice.
It would be lovely.
It would be good. Yeah. I like the technology. I like the fact that it's already being tested. I like the vision of Sir Tim and the rest of the team down at Emirates thinking about this. I was bamboozled by the fact that 50% of the airplane's weight was down to the glass used. Yeah. But then also, it sort of brings to this question, because there are those little anomalies, aren't they, of when you fly. And you know when you're about to come into land and somebody comes down and checks you've got your seatbelt on, they always ask you to put the blind up, please, because that is protocol for when landing. How's that going to work when you've got nothing to put up because you've just got an image?
It'll save them a job.
Save them a job. There we are.
So fewer airline staff, one less person will have to rewrite
the manual, the training manual.
Oh, definitely. Yes. So it'll all be to see. I think we'll watch and wait.
They also dim the lights as if that's going to make the slightest bit of difference when an aircraft is screaming towards the ground.
Dim the lights.
1,000 miles an hour.
Open the,
So, well, as long as I can see what's going on out the window, I'll be fine.
I always actually enjoy coming into Terminal 3 here because we fly directly over Uptown School. And I've always thought, as one of Talim's schools, we should have pink neon lighting directing people as you're flying over it, saying this is Uptown School, it's a very good school, come and see us. There's an IB school.
An opportunity for a bit of branding on
maybe,
the roof as
it
well.
It would have been, but maybe I'll think about that now in terms of if they're going to close all the windows off, nobody will see us. But the camera underneath can see it.
I suppose the other thing, though, I mean, jesting aside, one opportunity that does arise is a branding opportunity, an advertising opportunity in terms of the holographics they're going to use in this.
Oh, Lord. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. That would be a downward step, wouldn't it?
Well, depending on which brands and how often, I mean, maybe they could regulate it, but you're not wrong. I mean, it must be a branding opportunity. You say, for example, there's a very, very... there's a great point in, depending on which flight path they take, but I remember flying on Etihad to London, and we went right past Mount Ararat, which is, if you've ever seen it, it's spectacular. If you look out to the right, it's just a great big, you need the right conditions. Literally spectacular mountain. Imagine someone beaming a logo onto that, and then, high intensity with this sort of enhanced vision in these enhanced images that come through the window. I mean,
no, just flip my boat now. I'm going back to windows. I'll pay for window.
Give us the hot windows after all. Just another little addendum to this, because we are obviously a number of us heading to the airports at some point in the coming weeks for the summer getaway. Summer travel is going to be intense. In fact, it's round about now, isn't it? We should have ourselves a little bit of a sweepstake in terms of when we're going to get that official press release from Emirates about heading to the airport nice and early, because they're expecting record numbers over the coming weeks.
Oh, yes.
That will come out very shortly.
That will come out very, very shortly. All you need to know is that you just need to leave early. Flights will leave. Airports will be full.
Record numbers are coming your way.
Get there early.
5th of July.
But so, you know it's true.
5th of July.
5th of July is the day that the schools break up.
Yeah.
So I leave on the 7th of July.
Yeah. So that whole weekend will be busy, busy, busy. 3 hours you need before you get to the airport, I would suggest.
I remember, we're always so, confident about how easy it is to get to the airport. Yeah. It takes 20 minutes. 20 minutes, stop fussing, Dad. It's 20 minutes. I mean, Dad, in that circumstance, by the way. And then, of course, off we are going on this holiday. And it was actually the spring break. And, of course, every single other human being who can is going away at the same spring holiday. And the road, it was backed up for miles. Couldn't even get into the airport. Getting tenser and tenser. So, anyway, we'll be reading that press release and obeying it.
We're going to cheat. And, Rose, you'll be horrified. We're bunking off school a day early and going, taking the 2 in the morning flight.
It'll be empty overnight.
It'll be absolutely empty.
Half the price and empty. I approve.
Unfortunately, it wasn't half the price, but we're still doing it.
Just a quick one on that, because there is going to be sort of heightened stress levels at airports. Emirates and Dubai airports have come up with a novel way of trying to pacify people.
Yes, I mean, always in the business of customer delight, Emirates are now looking to give away free ice cream this summer season. Their own ice cream, it's called Emperor. It's made by the Emirates Flight Catering Services, and the airline is expecting to serve 2 million cups of ice cream to its customers over the next 3 months. So look out for their branded ice cream carts. There are 5 flavours: chocolate, vanilla, and get this one, date and Arabic coffee, mango sorbet and lemon sorbet. And you'll only get them, though, if you're travelling between midnight and 3 a.m. or 12:30 to 2:30 in the afternoon and 6 to 9 in the evening. So if your flights are anywhere around those times, make sure you go and have an ice cream on Emirates.
Look at that. Take advantage
of it. Do you know, I've got to say it, but the person that came up with that does not have small children, because the last thing you want to do is stuff your children with sugar before you get them on the plane.
Sticky, getting on a plane. What could possibly go wrong? Anyway, your thoughts on summer travel? Keep them coming in, 4001. We've got a couple of more stories from Roz and from Archie in just a few moments' time. Your comments to 4001.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. On the Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Keep coming, 4001. Augusto, thank you for your thoughts this morning. Instead of banning plastics, why not teach people what can be done with plastic bags? Thank you for that one, Augusto. And Simon's come in as well, saying bag for life from certain supermarkets here. 350 dirhams, that's $100. Profiteering, says Simon. Thank you for that. 4001, if you want to have your say on the lines, let's go over to Archie Behrens, who's with us here in studio. He's been following up on a story from Unilever. What are they up to?
They are dumping celebrities who pay for followers. This is the good old story. There's been a lot of this recently, social media influencers. Unilever, for those who don't know, is the owner of some of the largest brands in the world. Including, I'm going to give them some free advertising, but it doesn't matter. Hellman's mayonnaise, Lipton's tea, those sorts of Signal toothpaste. I mean, they own millions and thousands and thousands of brands, and they have decided to stop paying celebrities and clamping down on celebrities who basically endorse their brands. And this, in our industry here, has become a big issue because we're coming across. We want to get influencers to endorse our clients who charge an absolute fortune and for the fact that they have large numbers of followers. I mean, it's advertising in disguise, but we're increasingly coming to the view that it's actually not worth the money. Mm. There's certainly it's starting to become regulated. You know, you have to have a license to be such an influencer. I welcome that. But I think here's an example of a global owner of brands sort of voting, showing the world what they think of this. Mm. And it's become a major issue in our industry.
Obviously a major issue here in the region at the moment. A lot of lights being shone on the e-businesses setting up here and the licenses therein. That was Archie Behrens giving his thoughts on something close to his heart and, of course, in his expertise. As is the next story for Roz, because we've already dealt with a couple of education stories. School trips. Here's an interesting one. What with the summer holidays just a few weeks away? It's interesting to see some schools are away on school trips at the moment for a week and more as well. This is a really interesting story about the worth of school trips.
Indeed,
maybe
yes.
You can just give us a few more details.
Well, with 14 days left to go before the end of the academic year, not that we're all counting. I'm sure the teachers know how many hours and seconds there are. But the school trips question is something that comes up time and time again. And I think that just on reflection, the many of our fondest memories of school life are not actually formed of being in the classroom, but they are more than often than not when you're actually on a school trip. So visiting memorials and museums and monuments and school children having the opportunity to see historic sites and understand the culture and the history and what the forefathers have gone through to establish the country as it is today is really, really important. And this is a UK story initially, but it actually impacts what we have here in the UAE as international schools too, because when government funds are cut, the first thing that go are all of the extras. And these extracurricular activities, these school trips sometimes, are affected by that. In fact, 68% of school leaders saying in the UK at the moment they're unlikely to fulfil the school trips and visits they would have actually had planned. So anything that's non-essential gets cut. And I think when you're looking at school fees being frozen next year, this is something for parents to watch out for in terms of things that were inherently within the school fees, what now falls without the school fees, as some of the investors are looking to recover some of that lost money. Mm. I hasten to add, it's not something that Talim would be looking at, because we always encourage our schools to look at where a school trip is relevant. You know, where is the educational merit in going to something that actually, I mean, one of our classic tests that we have for new principals coming in when they're being interviewed is to write a school letter to parents saying about the cost of a trip to the Burj Khalifa, for example. Mm. And Burj Khalifa being an iconic institutional monument here, what is the education merit? Well, if you come down off the Burj Khalifa, you go past that wonderful array of information about how it was built, why it was built, the whole design, the construction. There's some huge lessons there just to learn, as well as, of course, the excitement of being on the tallest building in the world. So children need to understand who they are, where they come from, and learn to belong. And these school visits and outward bound trips do an awful lot, play an essential role in creating that growth and development for children.
Your thoughts on that one would be appreciated. We've got time for one more, and it's one that, well, I'm sure will resonate with a number of people. I'm going to give you a little insight into the inner workings of Shay Urquhart now, because I had a fairly frank conversation with the War Office, Mrs. Urquhart, during the weekend, where she, I think she started the conversation with, the two things I can't bear about you, Tom, are... Actually, it wasn't two. I think it was a little longer than that. But the first one I won't mention. 18. The second one is you spend far too much time in bed on a Friday and Saturday morning when you get the opportunity. Now, I quite like lying. I am one of four a lie-in. And there is new research out, Roz, that suggests that I'm not in the minority there. And still the verdict's out, isn't it, with regards to whether it's good or bad for us?
Well, it is, but like most things in research, there's always a different angle to it in terms of what should we be doing, what should we be doing, what shouldn't we be doing. So the argument is that 90% of UAE residents reported get less than 8 hours sleep a night. Yep. And we're just not getting enough sleep, and that can lead to problems with our health and an early grave, which is a cheering prospect. But there is a remedy. This study that's recently been published is talking about the fact that you can actually make up for lost sleep at the weekend. So this really helps my argument too, because I am one of those people who has very short nights and occasionally will try and sleep in at the weekend, although often my brain just goes bing at 6 o'clock and you think, shall I lie here or shall I actually get up and do something about it? But there's a lot of controversy amongst sleep researchers who've long argued that it's impossible to catch up on sleep, and this latest study is saying perhaps it's not impossible. So that's an interesting benefit for the cumulative effect of inadequate sleep that cannot be undone, which was previously the thought.
Archie Barons, to lie in or not to lie in?
Oh, to lie in, Tom.
Quite
definitely,
right.
And you should go straight back home tonight, with armed with that article, and show it straight to the War Office and say, "There, you see, I'm going to be a better and more healthy person
exactly.
if you let me lie in."
Especially if you deliver the Sunday Times and a cup of tea, that would be nice as well.
But just as a guide for you, just before you get carried away with 9 hours of sleep, preschoolers aged between 3 to 5 should be getting around 10 to 13 hours. Right. And this is an important message here in this country, because quite often you see a lot of 3 to 5 year olds in the shopping malls late at night when school is the following day. So parents, please, 10 to 13 hours for your 3 to 5 year olds. Teenagers between 14 and 17 actually need 8 to 10 hours, so not 22 hours as some teenagers might think at the weekend. And adults actually need around 7 to 9 hours, we're told. Now, some individuals can cope perfectly well with as little as 6 and as much as 10. Mm. So 6 in the week and 10 at the weekends. That does include for me, though. I keep telling my husband, sleeping on the settee in front of the football.
I suppose that opens the argument, doesn't it, Archie? This whole idea of the you know, it goes back to sort of the divisions in us, hunters-gatherers, early birds versus night owls. There are two different sort of characters.
And also cultures. I mean, you look at the Spanish, for example. You know, the siesta is...
the afternoon.
Yeah, it's an established part of culture, of Spanish culture. You have the siesta in the hottest part of the day, and then you end up actually having your dinner very, very late. Mm. And often they don't get to bed till 3-4 in the morning. So, you know, do they get enough sleep that way? Is that the right sleep pattern? I'd be interested to know if there's any research on that. It's not just about how many hours you sleep you have, but when you have them.
I hope that pattern works, because I get up at 4:30 for work here, and then I go back and have a nap, like a three-year-old, basically between sort of 1 and 4.
Nice.
I nap, and then I can stay up and have a normal adult life till 11 p.m.
3 o'clock in the morning at Mahiki.
Well, precisely. Yes.
For walking in here, rock and roll. But it's true, isn't it? The cultural thing. I mean, Japan, they're great believers of the catnap, aren't they? You know, little bites regularly throughout the day.
Yeah, and also the other part of Japanese culture I heard, which is if you've had the late night, you know, you've been out really, really late, it is absolutely, you are not allowed to not turn up or turn up late. You just turn up. And if you fall asleep at your desk, that's fine, but you got to be there. Again, these little cultural
presenteeism.
Yes, indeed.
Look at the time. We've got to go to the news desk. I hate to draw a line under this because we've only just scratched the surface on some of these stories, but hopefully it has prompted some thought from a number of the listeners out there. I do very much appreciate the time and the expertise of our two paper reviewers today. Archie Behrens, thanks very much indeed to you. Archie is the chairman of Hanover Middle East. If people would like to get in touch with you and the team at Hanover, Arch, best way?
info@hanovercoms.com.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Enjoy the rest of the World Cup.
Can I just give a quick shout out to one of my colleagues, Sara Gabrala. Bless her. She was not enjoying her Eid. She was out at Yas Mall doing a customer survey for one of our clients. So massive shout out to her.
Look at that. Do one for the team. And thanks also to Rosamund Marshall, CEO of Tahleem. Ros, if people want to get in touch with you and the Tahleem team?
The best thing to do is look at our website, www.tahleem.ae, where you'll see all 10 of our schools featured there, and as well as our central office. So if you need anything, just give us a shout.
Were you conducting any parent reviews to
We're
malls over the weekend?
We're always working, actually. If you talk to our teachers, they're always working over the weekends. And there was a lot of work going on over the activity, and my emails were a testament to that. So a lot of changes to get sorted out, ready for the next year. So everyone's focused very much on August induction and welcoming another couple of hundred new teachers to Dubai and Abu Dhabi.
Interesting times for all. To Ros, to Archie, thank you very much indeed. To all of you, thank you. Quick reminder of a few things that are going on around town and, of course, here at Dubai I-103.8. Now, more so than our Songs of the Summer promotion, we want you to help us shape the playlist. You could win a family holiday for four to Sicily. All you have to do, go to Dubai I-103.8, take part in a quick music survey for your chance to win and hear music that you want to listen to as of the beginning of July right here on Dubai I-103.8.com.
Get involved and help set the agenda. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai I Messenger app. Bringing you all the action on and off the pitch. The 2018 World Cup in association with Bridgewater Tavern. The only place to watch your team this summer.
So we've all settled in to the first weekend of action. What a weekend it has been. None more so than day four of the FIFA World Cup 2018.
It's a good hit. It's a goal from the skipper, Alexander Kolarov. What a way to start for Brazil. What a hit from miles out. Rafael Marquez becomes just the third player to play in five World Cups.
We will look ahead to the games today on day five, including England's first game of the tournament. We will look back at yesterday's action on day four, featuring two firm favourites for the tournament, not having it all their own way in Germany and Brazil. But before all that, I'm going to ask Chris McCarty just to cast his ears and his eyes and his memories back as far as Thursday, where we saw the first game, all the way through to yesterday. Chris McCarty, head of sport, joins us live on the line. Morning, Chris.
A very good one to you, Tom.
Vintage World Cup action, first weekend?
Absolutely, yes. I don't think there's too many people complaining unless you're a fan of one of the teams that perhaps have lost their opening matches, but it has been vintage. It kicked off with that 5-0 win for the host, Russia, over what was a poor Saudi Arabia side. You've got to say, then we saw the 3-3 classic between the Iberian rivals, Spain and Portugal, on Friday evening. We've seen Germany, the defending champion, knocked last night. We've seen the pre-tournament favourites in Brazil held to a 1-1 draw by Switzerland. We've seen VAR used as well in that win for France. An unconvincing win, it's got to be said, for France over Australia. So if you're asking me, has it been vintage these opening 4 days, I would say yes, it has.
Let's look back at some of the big games from yesterday. You mentioned there the fact that Germany were in action. They didn't have it all their own way. Why? Because of this.
Nicely done again. Here goes Hernandez, taking on Boateng. He's got support here from Lozano. Cuts it back inside. It's Lozano! It's 1-0 Mexico! And the man who's shone through the qualifiers has lit up the opening game in Group F.
I love the fact, Chris McCarty, that there are reports that there was a minor earthquake in Mexico last night when that happened.
I can understand why. I'm sure the celebrations went long into the night as far as Guadalajara to Mexico City and further afield. What a performance it was from Mexico. Yes, okay, they maybe rode their luck in the second 45 minutes, but for that opening 45, they put the scare, they put the frighteners on Germany. Irving Lozano, the man that scored the goal, he actually scored four in qualifying. He was the top goal scorer for Mexico. I've had my eye on this young boy for a long time now. Plays his club football over in Holland with PSV Eindhoven. He was the scourge of Germany last night. It was a fantastic goal. If Spain, if Argentina, if Brazil had scored that goal last night, would be eulogising it for a long time. They got the ball, they won the ball back within 3-4 passes. Irving Lozano scampering clear and a fine, fine finish past Manuel Neuer. And what is it about defending champions as well, Tom? Because this is the third consecutive World Cup that we've seen the defending champions fail to win. We saw Italy draw 1-1 with Paraguay, remember, back in 2010. We saw Spain taken apart by Netherlands 5-1 4 years ago. And we've seen Germany come a cropper last night as well. Germany have work to do in this group. They will now take on Sweden and South Korea, those two teams facing off from 4 p.m. this evening. They've got to get 6 points there. If they don't, and I will say if they don't, and Brazil top their group, we could be looking at a Brazil-Germany last 16 tie. That is quite the mouth-watering prospect.
Sweden against South Korea, as you mentioned, one of the games to look forward to a little later on today. A lot of eyeballs on that, following on from that shock result yesterday. From my point, I just want to get your thoughts as well. Germany just looked a little bit undercooked. They didn't look like your sort of regular German team that you expect to see at a major tournament.
No, didn't. Whether they're taking, maybe they perhaps took Mexico for granted. But again, I guess if you look at their recent form, Tom, they've only actually won once since September. They've had a poor recent run of results in friendlies, and I appreciate that friendlies, you can't read too much into those, but this Germany side have been not undercooked, but they've not been in form, and looking at their starting 11, that was their oldest starting 11, incidentally, since the final in 2002 against Brazil. So maybe, just maybe, this German side may be resting on their laurels a little bit. One thing I did notice from last night's game, and yes, okay, hindsight's a wonderful thing, missing Leroy Sané. The decision to leave out the Manchester City winger has been much deliberated and much discussed. Last night, in that final 20-25 minutes, his pace, his directness was something that would have added to that Germany attack. Joachim Löw, the German boss, he threw everything at Mexico. Marco Reus, the Borussia Dortmund winger, came on. He had the big man Mario Gomez on for the final 10 minutes. Everything that they threw at Mexico, well, Mexico repelled. So a super victory for Mexico. Germany now, the defending champions, under enormous pressure for the rest of their group matches.
Brazil always under pressure when they come into major tournaments. Such is the legacy and the history of their extraordinary nation. None more so than going into this one when they had one of the strongest squads that they put together for quite some time. It was all going according to plan in the first half, thanks to Philippe Coutinho.
Marcelo. What a way to start for Brazil. What a hit from miles out. Coutinho. Brazil lead at the World Cup.
It is the scourge of sending tweets out and texts at half-time. I basically said, give the trophy to Brazil at half-time last night, and then went to bed, and then woke up this morning and said, hang on, we might want to reevaluate this one.
Indeed, yes. What is the old cliche? It is a game of two halves, of course, Tom. And yes, Switzerland, listen, make no mistake, and I said on the preview show last week, this Switzerland side is a good side. They were only beaten by Portugal on goal difference in their group stage in qualifying. So the Switzerland team are no mugs. That being said, when Brazil take the lead, a stupendous strike from Philippe Coutinho, one of his very best, out of the top drawer, you expected them to kick on. If anything, they kind of went back into their shells a little bit, and maybe that's the wake-up call that Brazil needed, Tom. I still make them favourites. Switzerland were good. Brazil were abject, certainly in the second 45, but they've got enough match winners in that team, the likes of Neymar, Gabriel Jesus, Philippe Coutinho, Willian as well, the Chelsea wide man. That, listen, let's not read too much into that last night. 1-1 draw is still a decent result. They'll still qualify from this group, and I would still say they are the favourites to pick up that famous trophy on July 15th.
Well, if you look at the way they played in that first half, sublime at moments, that's for sure. Let's turn our attention to today, Chris McCarty. You and Robbie, just put us in the picture for those that don't know where the sports team are for all the World Cup coverage.
Yeah, we're down at the JW Marriott Marquis. Of course, that's located down in Business Bay, just on Sheikh Zayed Road. We're down at the Bridgewater Tavern. We've got a wonderful little spot upstairs of the Bridgewater Tavern, two floors down there. It was jam-packed last night, and we welcome anyone down there to get involved in our broadcast, whether you're a fan of a nation, whether you're just a football fan. Come on in. We'll get a conversation with you guys. And it is just worth marking your card as well. We are going to be joined by the Liverpool legend, former England striker Robbie Fowler. He's going to be with us throughout our duration of our show tomorrow night and on Wednesday night as well. So if you are a fan of Liverpool, a fan of England, just a fan of football, and you want to rub shoulders with some footballing royalty, then Robbie Fowler will be with us for Tuesday and Wednesday. Yes, we're down there. The 7 p.m. game, it works perfectly for us, Tom. Giving you goal updates as and when they go in, and that match this evening is Belgium taking on the Minnows of Panama. So if you're not able to get a television screen, keep it locked in Dubai at 103.8.
4 o'clock is Sweden against South Korea, 7 o'clock is Belgium against Panama, and at 10 o'clock this evening, Tunisia taking on England. Three games to look forward to on day 5 of the FIFA World Cup. You talked there about the pressure on teams, a bit of pressure on our Feather the Forecaster at the moment. Had a cracking first couple of days, and then, well, she'll be a bit of pressure on her today, surely.
There is a bit of pressure on our winged friend Farah the Falcon. She has had, as you rightly point out, Tom, a phenomenal start. I think she correctly predicted 6 of the first 8. After last night's shenanigans, though, she's now sitting on a record of 7-11. Still decent, and as a lot of people have pointed out on social media, 3 of those games were a draw, and the defending champions, Germany, they're the only team really to let Farah down. And if you scratch beneath the surface a little bit more, and it's all about narrative, we work in the media game. If you think she's been let down by the world's two best players, Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, Ronaldo scoring that 86-minute free kick, she did back Spain. Lionel Messi missing that penalty, she did back Argentina. She's been let down by the defending champions in Germany, and she's been let down by the pre-tournament favourites in Brazil. So it's still a decent start for Farah, but yes, I take your point, Tom. She is under an awful lot of pressure to get 3 from 3 on day 5.
She performs under pressure. And mind you, you say that she was let down by Germany, as was the entire German nation, judging by a couple of the newspaper headlines coming out of there today.
Indeed, yeah, I think it's already, isn't it, that they're already batting down the hatches, they're already claiming that it's in chaos. Not to be, though. Again, I want to temper that by saying they can still bounce back. If they beat Sweden and beat South Korea, that opening defeat will be forgotten. And it is just worth pointing out that there is history of World Cup winners losing their opening game. Go back to 2010, Switzerland beat Spain on that opening match. And what did Spain go on and do? Well, they beat all before them to win the World Cup.
More from Chris McCarthy in just a few moments' time. We've got some golf to talk about. We've got some tennis to talk about. We've got motorsport. And, of course, looking ahead to one of the big festivals of horse racing over in the UK throughout the coming week. But, of course, one of the big talking points will be throughout the entire next 4 weeks, the FIFA World Cup 2018.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Yeah, final few moments from us, then we hand over to Helen Farmer. Enough time, though, to look at some of the other big sports stories of the last 24 hours. None more so than the US Open, which came to a thrilling conclusion last night, which is a good thing, given all the debate that's been going on about the course over the last 4 days. I just want to play a little clip it before we get to Chris McCarthy and get his thoughts on what has been a controversial US Open in many ways. These are the thoughts of some of the world's leading players before round one of the US Open at Shinnecock Hills over in New York.
This is the certainly my favorite, one of my favorite courses.
I really enjoyed the golf course. I think it's, you know, it's a fantastic venue.
Shinnecock's my favorite as far as it's a real golf course. It's going to test you day in and day out, and it's very straightforward right in front of you. I love the golf course, you know, especially with how the conditions have been, especially yesterday with a bit of wind and the dryness. It sort of reminds me of some of the courses from back home a little bit, the way the golf course has been playing.
It's the best setup, in my opinion, that we've seen, and the reason I say that is all areas of your game are being tested.
Phil Mickelson, Rory McIlroy, some of the big guns of the world of golf giving their thoughts ahead of the tournament. Chris McCarthy, I wonder whether they would have shared those thoughts at the end of the tournament.
I loved listening to that, Tom. That tickled me pink, so it has. But I can tell you, no, an awful lot of them, unless you're Brooks Koepka, will be toasting the Shinnecock Hills golf course.
It's been treacherous. It has at times been horrendous. It's been farcical at times, let us be honest. And in the case of Rory McIlroy, 10 over, he missed the cut. Tiger Woods missed the cut. Jordan Spieth, Sergio Garcia, Jason Day. So many of the leading lights of world golf missing the cut. Phil Mickelson having an absolute meltdown on Saturday, an 81, 11 over par just for his round. And it got so bad that on the 13th, he putted from about 5 feet. The ball was rolling off. The ball was basically rolling off, I think, back to the tee box. He ran after it. He caught up with it and just putted it back. He incurred a two-stroke penalty. He incurred the wrath of an awful lot of people, watchers, avid listeners and watchers of golf for that little misdemeanour. He said, well, people need to grow up. People need to know the rules. He knew the rules and he took advantage of it. But this has been, I think, has been a quite embarrassing US Open. Brooks got defending champion, of course, going on and winning it yet again, becoming the first man since Curtis Strange, 88 and 89, to successfully defend his Open title. But he's 1-1 over par, Tom. It's not good for the game of golf. Yes, okay, it maybe is for those people that live and breathe golf. It is for your Fairweather fans. It isn't for people like me, because I switched off a long time ago.
Let's get a couple of quick lines on some of the other big stories before we hand over to the news team. Just quickly, so clay season has been dominated by Rafa Nadal. We now move on to the grass. Move aside, Rafa. Hello, Roger.
Yeah, indeed. 2.5 months off and not a bit of rust on Roger. He won. He beat Milos Raonic yesterday to pick up the Mercedes Cup over in Stuttgart. A 6-4, 7-6 win for the Swiss Maestro over his Canadian opponent. That a 98 tour title, Tom. It takes him to within, 11 of the record. Jimmy Connors, 109. And given the way that he's playing, you wouldn't back against Roger Federer, going on and beating that record. He's back to world number one as well. He shows no signs of slowing down. And given the fact that Wimbledon kicks off in 2 weeks, he is undoubtedly the favourite to win what would be a scarcely believable 21st Grand Slam title. Incredible.
Fernando Alonso has come in for some criticism from F1 aficionados about the fact that he's been mixing his time between F1 circuit and Le Mans. It seems to have paid off though this year.
Yes, Fernando Alonso completing the second leg of what he will hope one day will be the Triple Crown in motorsport. Only Graham Hill has won all three of those classic races in the entire history of motorsport. Fernando Alonso is attempting to become the second man. He is already a winner of the Monaco Grand Prix. He has now added the Le Mans at 24 hours. He took victory yesterday alongside his teammates Sebastian Bumi and Kazuki Nakashima. That was ending Toyota's long drought. They've waited a long time to get success in the Le Mans 24 hours. So Fernando Alonso, and I do expect him very soon to retire from F1. His focus for the entirety of his career moving forward will be on winning the big one over in the US. It is the Indy 500. If he can do that, then he's adding his name to a list of just one, and that is winners of the Triple Crown.
And the flat racing season welcomes its Blue Ribbon event over in the UK, and extreme interest on it from the Godolphin camp as Royal Ascot gets underway tomorrow.
It does indeed, yes. An awful lot of intrigue surrounding Godolphin. They're on a bit of a high after Mather's victory over in the Derby a week or so ago, Tom. And once again, the rivalry between Godolphin and Coolmore will rear itself and into the mirror for us all. I'm looking forward to Royal Ascot. I know you're such a huge horse racing fan as well, and I've no doubt that me and you will be finding somewhere quiet in amongst the football, of course, to catch some of this, because yeah, Godolphin have got a number of fancied horses. It is on Dubai Racing Television. I'm looking forward to it. We just got to sort out where we're going to watch it, Tom.
We will sort that out indeed. For now though, Chris McCarty, thanks very much indeed. Chris is our head of sport. He, Robbie and the rest of the team are live down at Bridgewater Tavern. Do join them and Robbie Fowler tomorrow evening, although Chris and Robbie Greenfield will be down there today. It's too many Robbies getting confused at the moment. They're down there every day from 7 o'clock, so enjoy that one. Georgia, thanks to you.
Pleasure.
Thanks very much indeed to you, Esther. Thanks also to Sunil and all the team back of hands putting this one together. We're back tomorrow from 10. We're going to hand over to the news team now for the latest headlines at midday. Then you've got Helen Farmer with Dubai Today straight after that. And as we mentioned there with Chris and the rest of the team, Royal Ascot gets underway tomorrow. I've got a tip for you, in fact. Byron Bay on Friday in the Albany on Meath.
Welcome to Royal Ascot, the best race meeting in the world.
Her Majesty the Queen and the Royal Procession will sweep through these famous Golden Gates.
Big old clear now by 2.5 lengths. Still be a close finish. They've got a half furlong to go. She is scorching the Ascot turf.
They take it together with one final surge and will prevail.
Racing at its finest. Nothing comes close to Royal Ascot.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.